You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the May 2023 issue of Vanity Fair magazine. This is Vanity Fair, Part B. Here's the continuation of Paradise Lost by David Kushner. After looking at the plan for its tropical wonderland, Meade did his usual computer modeling and analysis. He looked at the hydrodynamics of putting in the artificial reef pass, the desalinization plans. In April 2018, he co-authored a report called Coastal Processes Assessment for Malolo Island Resort, which, on his CV, he cites as prepared for free soil real estate. Among other things, he recommended the most sustainable materials for the overwater burrs, which would float off just a small boardwalk through the middle of the mangroves. Meade makes a point to say that while he comes up with the environmental designs, he has no control over whether or how his clients implement them. But, he says, the builders at Freesoul followed his plan perfectly. They weren't mowing down mangroves, he insists. They were doing the right things. They were following the rules. He pauses to correct himself. They were following the advice. Sorry, he continues, not the rules. 4. The Prime Minister. In September 2018 in Bangkok, Fiji Prime Minister Josiah Vareki Frank Bainimarama gave the opening remarks at a UN climate change conference. Bainimarama was a controversial and authoritarian leader. After instigating a coup in 2006, the former commander of the Fijian military installed himself in power the next year. Soon after, he implemented a so-called media industry development decree, which subjected journalists to fines, intimidation, and imprisonment for acting critically of his regime. In May 2022, the global press freedom watchdog Reporters Without Borders ranked Fiji as the worst place for journalists in the Pacific. This wasn't the only scandal embroiling Bainimarama in 2018. Weeks earlier, the leader of a South Korean doomsday cult was arrested for holding 400 followers captive in Fiji. Shinokju, founder of the Grace Road Church, had led them to the country in 2014 as a safe haven from a prophesied famine, but escapees told of violent beatings and bizarre rituals. Grace Road allegedly maintained deep ties with the Fijian government, which had provided it with millions of dollars in business loans. An investigation by the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project and the Korea Center for Investigative Journalism later found the sect now operates the country's largest chain of restaurants, controls roughly 400 hectares of farmland, owns 8 supermarkets and mini-marts, and runs 5 mobile petrol stations. Its businesses also provide services such as dentistry, events catering, heavy construction, and Korean beauty treatments. Despite the troubles at home, however, Bainimarama had fashioned himself as an environmental leader. As president of the Bangkok UN conference, he argued for the urgent implementation of the Paris Agreement. "Would any of us like to return to our people," he told the conference, "and tell them that we had the chance to do something truly great and truly necessary for the world we will pass to our children, but we lacked the will to get it done?" As Bainimarama spoke, the environmental calamity of the Freesoul project was playing out on Malolo. After being locked out of their beach in early 2018, Fox, Jack, and Joseva felt like they were facing an impossible fight. Freesoul wasn't even making an offer to buy their speck of land. They were simply taking it. Fox said the group later offered them $10,000. As the months passed, The trio came to see their struggle as indicative of the global fight for environmental justice. They began working with Kenneth Chambers, an environmental attorney and chairman of the University of the South Pacific School of Land Management and Development in Suva. Chambers, who died in 2019, told Newsroom he took on the case because it has raised serious questions about the Fijian government's effectiveness or enthusiasm to administer its own environmental laws. The stringent enforcement provisions of the country's Environment Management Act, Chambers knew, require that developers first obtain environmental approval before building. Yet Freesoul was flouting the laws, illegally reclaiming beach access, dredging and smashing the reef to build a boat channel on Fox, Jack, and Josefa's Beach, dumping debris from the destroyed reef on protected seagrass, destabilizing the hillsides after stripping them of vegetation, dumping raw sewage and trash into protected seaside mangroves, plowing over reefs at low tides in excavators and trucks. In August 2018, Chambers succeeded in getting an interim injunction on Fox, Jack, and Josefa's behalf from the Fijian courts, but Freesoul kept building. The next month, the trio flew a drone over the site, filming the continued construction and environmental vandalism. The trucks and workers and dead mangroves and reefs. They sent the photos and videos to the Attorney General's office. Freesoul just continued to build. How is Bainimarama and the government letting this happen, they wondered, just yards from a superyacht marina, no less? 5. The showdown. To circumvent Bainimarama's restrictions on the Fijian press, Fox, Jack, and Josefa took their story to Melanie Reed, lead investigations editor for Newsroom in New Zealand. Reed's story, published on February 7, 2019, detailed the environmental damage and included devastating before and after pictures of the site. "Everyone is asking what Freesoul's secret is," Chambers told her. "How this could happen with no EIA and no foreshore lease in place? Are the institutions just too busy and under-resourced, or is something more sinister going on?" After the story appeared, the local villagers tried to rescind Freesoul's lease and stop construction. "This, too, is the government's fault," Solivu village elder Jonitani Nyati told Newsroom, "because so many times they have been told they must stop work, but no one has made them. Now they bring in the barges at 3 and 4 in the morning and unload all the materials while everyone is asleep." Despite their outcries, the work continued. Fijians lined the fence with placards protesting Freesoul. A woman held a handwritten sign that read, "God is our main provider. He gave us our land, sea, and environment to look after, but not be abused." When Fox, Jack, and Josefa returned with Reed 2 months later, in April 2019, a young Chinese man who represented Freesoul tried to wrestle Fox off the property. Given the government's tacit support of Freesoul, Fox avoided a fight, even when, he says, the man wielded a rusty metal rod. An existential surfer cowboy, he steadied himself like he was facing a monster wave. "I was very aware that if I was aggressive back to that man," he says, "I would be thrown in jail pretty quickly." Reed and her crew were later arrested in Suva outside Freesoul offices by local police for trespassing and taken to jail. Mead has a two-word descriptor for accusations that the resort builders were illegally using Fox, Jack, and Josefa's land: fake news. "Freesoul wasn't on their beach," he says. "They were right on the boundary." "The builders were already following the plan of what would have been acceptable," he tells me. As for accusations that his design amounted to environmental vandalism, he has two more words: completely bogus. 6. Enter the tech bros. Mead wasn't lingering on the showdown at Freesoul. He's got an even more ambitious project on his mind when we meet one starry night in July along his artificial beach at Vunabaka. dressed in a t-shirt, board shorts, and jandals, and sipping a Corona. He explains what was to be his most radical plan for Fiji yet. He wanted to create a world-class surfing wave by sculpting, as he put it, a coral reef. By shaving off a portion of the seabed floor, he says, he could not only create better ocean physics for wave making, but revitalize local marine life. That area where we've scraped the stuff off, he says, everything will come back there. Within one day, you'll see hydroids and some of the slimy type of algae. Within 2 years, it'll be back to the same as it was. This wasn't just one surfer nerd's kooky dream. The World Wave Project, as Mead and his partners dubbed it, got an early vote of confidence. It received pre-seed funding from the Founders Fund, the firm co-launched by Peter Thiel, the co-creator of PayPal, early backer of Facebook, and controversial billionaire conservative donor. Since the late 2000s, Mead and Anthony Marcotti, founder and former owner of a surf resort in Indonesia called Kandui, had been geeking out about how wave building could be a win-win for both surfers and the oceans. "It's not about money," Marcotti tells me. "It's all about how cool it would be to create something like this that benefits everyone and that helps the environment." Their friend Michael Lucas, the 50-year-old Kiwi surfer who co-owns Vunabaka Resort, agreed. "We're taking material from the area where the waves are breaking, and we're putting it in an area where they're not breaking," he says. "The fish will love it." So they thought, would investors? The WWP, if successful, could lead to strings of surf resorts being built in areas where none existed before. After launching an Indiegogo fundraising page detailing Mead's scientific plan, the WWP caught the attention of the Founders Fund's Scott Nolan, an early engineer at Elon Musk, SpaceX, and a surfer himself. Nolan saw Mead's innovation as a novel way to use the ocean's force to create a more efficient and ecologically sound answer to artificial wave pools. "Why don't we just go in the ocean?" Nolan tells me. "Can we reduce the cost of making a world-class surf resource by 10 to 100 times in the ocean such that it can actually be commercial? You can actually pay for real restoration and massively net positive habitat." Mead knew just the place to engineer their waves. Since 2012, he had been the owner and director of the Makai Beach Eco Surf Resort on the small Fijian island of Kamea. Located just across the bay from the garden island of Tavayuni, Makai's main draw was its proximity to some decent local surf. But the waves were seasonal. By shaving a portion of dead reef there, however, Mead could whip up his magic world-class waves all year. His group projected the resorts and tourism that would come up around this would bring in an estimated $30 million per year, with, as per Fijian custom, 10% going to the local landowners. And with the WWP planning to raise around $7 million from outside Fiji, it felt like the wave guys were giving the locals, as Lucas puts it, a gift. 7. Oyster will die. But as Mead and his cohorts quickly discovered, it was a gift the locals didn't desire. Fox put his concerns bluntly. "That's an idiot talking," Fox says. "I don't care how smart you think you are, you don't go ripping up a pristine reef." By the fall of 2021, concern over Mead's plan was spreading in the surrounding islands. "You can never replace a reef that's been destroyed," one local tells me in July as we walk along the shore, the Pacific lapping at our feet. "So many people's lives in these areas, especially in these remote areas," they say, "are connected to the reef and the health of the reef." Among them is Claude Prévost, a former advertising executive from Quebec City who now operates the Siva Fiji Pearls Farm near the WWP's proposed site. A gruff, tattooed, gray-haired 55-year-old, He usually wears a black pearl choker and several more black pearls around his wrist. One afternoon, he takes me scuba diving beneath the crystal blue waters nearby to see his pearl farm 30 feet below. Deep under the surface, several rows of palm-sized oysters hang from lines as pink, blue, black, and green pearls grow inside their shells. A half-dozen hammerhead sharks circle below us. Meade says the WWP would have had no impact whatsoever on Prevost Pearl Farm. I need an ecologically balanced reef that produces plankton for food for my oyster, Prevost says. I don't need a dead reef around me. Oyster will die. In July 2022, Prevost and his supporters held their Talanoa with the local villagers and chiefs to fight Meade's plan. Rusiat Rusi Laladidi, who serves as the Mata Nidtikini, or representative of the tribe, represented the seven villages of the Wainakali district. Rusi has a college degree, but he said most locals are poorly prepared to handle the legal and environmental complexities of local development. We can't do much, he said. I have to fight for them because most of the village, they only have primary, secondary level education. On the day we gathered at Prevost Pearl Farm, Stoltz, the spokesperson for the chiefs, said they blamed the Fijian government at the time for allowing Meade and developers in. Especially when our prime minister is the champion of climate change all over the world, Stoltz said angrily, going out throughout the world and telling all the people in the world that Fiji is the forerunner in climate change issues, yet at the same time, it's happening right here in Fiji, allowing people to come in and destroy our resources. In what Meade's group considered an act of goodwill, they offered each village a $4,500 donation before fishing rights would be negotiated, but the chiefs and villagers balked. What would that mean for the future of this generation, Stoltz said. You cannot repay the damage that would be done. $27,000 for the damage of our whole marine resources? I would say, in the international language, F off. 8. Ebb Tide. Brian Cregan is an Aussie surfer who famously starred in the 1979 surf film Band on the Run. For 24 years, he has owned a property on Kamea near Meade's resort and has spent countless days surfing the area. Those WWP guys were assuming they could steamroll their way with the local Fijians and the Fijian government, he tells me. And he knew Meade had tried something similar with the Free Soul project on Malolo. So he called Fox, Jack, and Joseva. After 2 years of fighting, the three friends were succeeding in finally beating back Free Soul on their shores. The assault on Fox by the Free Soul worker and the arrest of Reed and her newsroom crew made international waves, including a story on 60 Minutes in Australia. On April 4, 2019, Prime Minister Bainimarama apologized to the journalist for their treatment and vowed to bring an end to Free Soul's campaign. The conduct of Free Soul Real Estate's development has been deeply concerning to me personally for some time, he said. As both a Fijian who treasures our environment and a global advocate for sustainable development, I share in the public's outrage. We need to send a strong message to Free Soul and other developers looking to cause us harm that they are not welcome to operate in Fiji. If the Bainimarama government was concerned, of course, why didn't it take action before the journalists were arrested for asking questions? The answer, as Fox, Jack, and Joseva's attorney Ken Chambers saw it, was clear. I believe Free Soul is part of the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative, he told me before his death. A day after Bainimarama's apology, Fiji's Department of Environment revoked the project's approval for good. In April 2021, the High Court Chief Justice found Free Soul guilty on two counts of undertaking unauthorized development not guilty of one count of failing to comply with a prohibition notice and later fined it $450,000 for causing substantial harm to the environment, and ordered the company to post an additional $630,000 bond with the Department of Environment for rehabilitating the area. It's the first time in Fijian history that an environmental law has been used to bring criminal charges. The big question is whether the Chinese government will put its hand in its pocket to pay FreeSol's fines, Chambers said. Bainimarama's reign of almost 16 years ended in December when he was defeated by his rival, Sitiveni Rabuka of the People's Alliance. For Fox and the others, it feels like vindication. "We've never done anything wrong," Fox says. "We've never hurt anyone. We've never been aggressive towards anyone. We've never broken the law. And that's what we've done that's right." And that's exactly what they advised the activist fighting the World Wave Project to do. With their success over FreeSol, in fact, the tide was turning even more swiftly against Mead and the WWP. Supporters, including oceanographic explorer Jean-Michel Cousteau, son of the late ocean explorer Jacques Cousteau, joined the outcry. "My lifetime of experience and moral sense of duty compels me to strongly object to the World Wave Project's proposal to sculpt and modify any reefs to enhance surf breaks," he said. In a statement on behalf of his conservation group, Ocean Futures Society, "Coral reefs must be protected, not destroyed." The Tavayuni Tourism Association, an organization of 50-plus resorts in the area, agreed. It declared its opposition to the WWP, which it feared would remove healthy coral, change the ecosystem, impact adjoining reefs, and threaten the livelihoods of tourism. A scathing takedown of the project on the surfer site SwellNet was more direct. "When the bullheaded ambition of Dr. Shaw Mead meets the FU money of Scott Nolan, giving up simply isn't an option." On May 25, 2022, Mead and Lucas traveled to Nasilesli Village in Tavayuni to meet with the local chiefs about the project. The Fijian elders and villagers wore their formal tropical shirts. But there was no kava for their guest. "When I asked Stolz how he felt when he saw Lucas and Mead, his eyes narrow. I really want to eat their souls out," he says, "and I really want to eat their guts out." The meeting saw eruptions of similar anger. "Where the development will take place, it's a small area, and that's where we fish from," Iosifo Tikoi Salamoni, the traditional head of a local clan, said in Fijian, recorded by local news. "You are trying this development on our source of livelihood," he shouted. "Everyone sitting here doesn't want this development." Another man insinuated that the only reason Mead and Lucas were there at all was because the government had made no effort to stop them, any more than they had challenged FreeSol. Lucas stood and told the crowd that if they didn't want the project, the WWP would leave and take its money with it. "It's up to the community if they want to progress or if they don't," he tells me one afternoon over lobsters and beers at his resort, Vunabaka. "We are coming up here with an opportunity, and the opportunity is yours," he goes on. "If you don't want to take it, we'll take the project elsewhere. We thought this would help you." The locals on Kamea ultimately declined Mead and Lucas's request to build. Still, the WWP is unwavering. "It's already planning its first wave in two undisclosed cities," Mead tells me in January, "and hopes to get official approvals this year." Mead also says he has heard that Dixon Peng, FreeSol's local emissary, is back in town, and that discussions have resumed to begin work on the Malolo project. "In recent times, they're talking now about picking it up again," Mead says. Earlier this year, a Fijian court blocked FreeSol's efforts to overturn a 2019 injunction that halted work on the site. The new Fijian government backed Fox, Jack and Joseva's objection to its lifting. In March, the same court gave Free Souls 6 months to pay the remaining $122,000 it owed. While Mead's Wave builders seek to engineer their paradise elsewhere, Fox, Jack, and Joseva are hoping to bring theirs back. Malia Ruyon, an environmentalist they hired to survey the damage, estimates the cleanup will cost around $1 million and restore the mangroves and reef to their healthy state within 3 years. As of this writing, however, construction debris still litters the abandoned site. Without stabilization, Royan says, the marine life will never return. Fox, Jack, and Joseva, who now lives on the land in a small house and hut with his wife and 4 children, hope to use some of Free Soul's waste to build their own eco-lodge. That could be a good opportunity for us, which would be pretty ironic, Fox says, to buy some of the material that's there going to waste anyway. We might as well reuse that and lessen our footprint. In the meantime, the place is finally starting to feel more like home. It's Fox's 49th birthday, and they're celebrating here. Joseva, his family, and some local villagers are barbecuing on an open fire. Jack and Fox's wife, Jacinta, are getting schooled in how to hatchet open a coconut from one of Joseva's kids. The rainforest cradles over them. Cloud break curls on the horizon. Yeah, Fox says with a smile, then we'll start our own little venture. heal thyself. When Stephanie Tison met Anthony William, the cult-famous self-billed clairvoyant known as the medical medium, she felt an instant connection. Her belief in his abilities was unwavering. Her life would never be the same. By Dan Adler. Opening photo, The Seeker. It actually tells you what's wrong and how to fix it. Stephanie Tison, pictured here, would tell a friend of Anthony Williams' work. Stephanie Tison began pursuing new answers to her health concerns in 2013. She was 33 and had already molded her life around nutrition for years, traveling from her home in Newtown, Pennsylvania, to Hawaii and Southeast Asia to meet other raw vegans. Her family has a history of cancer, and after testing positive for two gene mutations correlating to an increased risk for breast cancer, she thought reconfiguring her diet could help. On the advice of the mother of a family for whom she had nannied, Tison booked a consultation with Anthony William, known on social media and in his books as the medical medium. A 53-year-old former health food store owner from Connecticut, William claims that at 4 years old, a spirit visited him and gave him the ability to scan bodies for disease by sight. During Tison's hour-long $400 phone call with William, he said that heavy metals from vaccines caused her migraines and that the Epstein-Barr virus was hiding out in her liver. He recommended that she start a regimen of wild blueberries, spirulina, cilantro, zinc, and vitamin B12, and later said that high estrogen levels fueled her headaches. William has said that negative energy can be a source of disease and that he can teach you to clear it, that he can give followers emotional support to rewire their brains and souls after post-traumatic stress disorder from long-term illnesses, that he can speak to the entity he calls the spirit of compassion on their behalf. He has said that his information is decades ahead of science, that he knows if objects are hidden in the walls of old homes, and that he fell into a long coma after running past a chemical spill from an overturned truck. His former associates say that much of his follower base is made up of women dealing with chronic illness and pain. It actually tells you what's wrong and how to fix it, Tison would later tell a friend. That's why Anthony's approach is so empowering. The diagnostic call buoyed her, and she started learning William's vernacular. The true cause of breast cancer is the Epstein-Barr virus, he wrote in his 2017 book, Thyroid Healing. In the coming years, Tison and William developed a friendship, and he eventually dropped his consultation fees. She began to work for William as an occasional assistant, accompanying him on trips to visit clients and speak at events. She held out hope. She often told friends and family that she could one day work for him full-time. Through his counsel, William declined repeated requests to comment on the record for this story. William is a frantic presence on his YouTube channel and social media accounts. He has 4 million Instagram followers. An article about his work, published by Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop in 2015, became the site's most read story that year. With his hair tied in its regular short ponytail, William showed up in a YouTube video with Novak Djokovic's wife, Jelena, on a 2019 episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, waving his hands over Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. In a podcast interview with Kate Hudson, he traveled to Los Angeles to make nighttime house calls for patrons. In 2019, publications including this magazine traced surging demand for celery juice among the wealthy and health conscious to one of his signature recommendations. To some degree, William has drawn from folk tradition in his work. He has compared himself to Edgar Cayce, who claimed to be clairvoyant and became known as a founding father of New Age. William's ascent has also coincided with the boom the wellness industry has undergone in the last decade as an ever-growing swath of consumers explores ideas like raw diets and detoxes. It's been a boon to a now common brand of social media entrepreneur. For many followers, William has functioned as an amusement or a supplemental health source. To a certain percentage of true believers, though, the medical medium serves as community and identity. As William gained more exposure, experts began to warn against his pseudoscience. Promoting the medical medium is no different than promoting anti-vaccine views or cleanses or coffee enemas, Jennifer Gunter, a San Francisco OBGYN and leading Goop critic, told the online magazine Inverse in 2018. The minimum is that people waste money, but there is great potential for harm with many of the therapies that are recommended and delays in diagnosis. William often folds his defense against such critiques into his pitch. I noticed that there's this desperate need to take down the medical medium out there, he recently told an online chat group. Like other alternative health practitioners, William's site includes standard disclaimer language. Anthony William is not a licensed medical doctor, chiropractor, osteopathic physician, naturopathic doctor, nutritionist, pharmacist, psychologist, psychotherapist, or other formally licensed healthcare professional, practitioner, or provider of any kind. Anthony William, medical medium, does not render medical, psychological, or other professional advice or treatment, nor does it provide or prescribe any medical diagnosis, treatment, medication, or remedy. Tissonne's belief in William never wavered. She was, according to her friends and family, a 30-something woman with a high emotional quotient, a lifelong student with a tendency to commit herself totally to various diet protocols or gurus. Where other of William's millions of followers might treat his dictates as larks or view them as part of the vast online orbit of self-billed health experts, Tissonne found herself transfixed. Stephanie referred to Anthony as he said he was, says a friend, just under God. Through her association with William, Tissonne spent time at the homes of Robert De Niro and Demi Moore, where he would advise them to buy thousands of dollars in supplements. Representatives for both actors declined to comment. Between 2014 and 2017, according to a record of Tissonne's text and voice messages obtained from her brother, Tissonne and William kept in regular communication that was as steady as it was wide-ranging. They analyzed her health and his career progress. She asked him about the circumstances of actor Brittany Murphy's death and how to handle debt. Tissonne also frequently texted with William's wife, Rachel Schutzman, and several medical medium associates about various ailments and her understanding of William's advice. Before William started his current business, he and Schutzman ran a health food store in the roughly 2,000-person town of Machias, Maine. According to a 2001 report in local newspaper, the Lubeck Light, the shop marked the couple's first retail venture since William began his career in natural healing in 1985. William eventually moved to Florida, where a Naples yoga studio advertised $12 medical intuitive readings with him. He began phone consultations as the medical medium in the early 2010s and saw his profile begin to rise. He performed a reading for Moore in 2014 and got a major break when the leading New Age publisher Hay House released Medical Medium, Secrets Behind Chronic and Mystery Illness the following year. Pre-fame medical medium clients remember William spending extra time on the phone with them, consulting and gossiping about raw food gurus. He talks in this sweet voice, says one. As a published author, that availability shifted. Books give credibility, Janice Donohue, a New York literary agent for health and cooking authors, says. something different than selling people supplements. In 2016, William established an informal franchise system of health practitioners. These affiliates didn't pay William, but were steeped in his thinking and spread the word. By then, William's and Tissot's social circles overlapped. She had become close with Phil McCluskey, a public speaker and author known in the raw food world for his 200-pound weight loss. At the beginning of 2015, McCluskey and his wife, Casey, an Australian former raw food coach and especially dedicated medical medium student, began helping William. The McCluskeys own a supplement company in Florida named Vimergy that William often recommends. Phil and Casey have described themselves as the medical medium's director of operations and director of content and education, but both say they have never worked for William. As William prepared his book debut, Tissot asked Phil McCluskey for help getting more work with William. He told Tissot they couldn't because the team had increased its Facebook ad spend to push William's work. McCluskey says he had checked with William's team and was relaying this news on its behalf. The medical medium became a polished brand with textbook-style offerings. Even by the volatile standards of the health personality business, William's full-fledged emergence looked sudden. "It just seemed to be there one day," Donard says. "He had been working on this for a really long time," the early client says, "and he has been trying to find fame and fortune." William began holding live events. One of his followers flew to attend the first one at the Sheraton Sand Key Hotel in Clearwater, Florida, in February 2016. She had been blowing through her savings, trying to alleviate years of illness, and had her first phone call with William the following week. "Thousands of people were waiting to talk to him," she remembers, "and here I was." She thought she'd never speak with him again, but he texted her a few days later. "I couldn't believe he was reaching out to me on a personal level," she says. "This was the greatest thing that ever happened to me." William eventually named the client as a practitioner on his referral page. That November, with De Niro and his family in the audience, and Tissot volunteering at the event, she gave a testimonial to William on stage at Lowe's Hollywood Hotel. William became Hay House's most successful author. He bought two new homes. Other self-styled medical intuitives flocked to him. Without William's recognition, the follower-turned-practitioner says, "You're just anyone else." William prefaced his online referral list with another disclaimer. "The names and associated links are provided for informational purposes only and are not intended to state or imply that Anthony William or Anthony William Incorporated recommends, endorses, supports, sponsors, or is in any way affiliated or associated with any person or entity listed below or any linked website or content." A vocal base of medical medium enthusiasts coalesced on Facebook and Reddit. They dissect William's diet recommendations and share their own experiences. "We're all a family at Medical Medium, and it's the safest place," he has said. "The family that's been through hell and back. It's the forgotten souls, I call them. It's the people who have been swept under the carpet, who've been sick, and they've been through so much, and there's no answers out there." On camera, he wraps his eccentricities in a smiling benevolence. "I know everything about coconuts," he once said. "I know it's a bold statement, but it's the truth." William's closest acolytes maintained his mystique. "You're not allowed to talk about your own level of connection with him," the practitioner says, "so it's hard to know about someone else's." In a 2015 text, he told Tissot, "No one cares about the truth. Do you think that vaccines are the only screw-up?" Shortly after publishing his first book, he told her to write a review dude and retaliate the evil review someone just put up on Amazon. Maybe throw a comment telling person how wrong, and they obviously didn't read it. Tissot was 20 years old when she absorbed her first health book. by Suzanne Summers, the sitcom actor. It was 2000. The social media-enabled wellness boom was still years off, but long-thriving subcultures tied to New Age thought and alternative diets were spreading online. Tissonne actively pursued her passions. She studied the raw food authors Douglas Graham and Don Bennett, and the naturopath Robert Morse. She spent a season living in a commune with David Wolfe, a superfood enthusiast and conspiracy theorist. By her 30s, Tissonne liked to joke about how she'd never been kissed. She had the word love tattooed on her arm, and a gentle communion with kids, which friends attribute to her enduring state of wonder. Above all, they describe her as solicitous and devoted, a connector in the raw food community. She met Sarma Melngailis at Pure Food and Wine, the aughts-era raw vegan hotspot in Manhattan that Melngailis opened before serving jail time for grand larceny and tax fraud. Tissonne met William in person for the first time in 2014, the year after her initial phone conversation, eventually landing some work with him as an ad hoc travel assistant. During their trips, she drove him around, ironed his shirts, and went on Whole Foods runs. They once got into a car accident on the way back from Moore's home in Los Angeles. As Tissonne grew closer to William, she added further restrictions to her raw diet, cutting out nuts, seeds, and avocado. For dinner, she sometimes ate two heads of romaine lettuce with cayenne and lemon. She would tell friends and family that she couldn't say too much about her work with William, but because they regularly texted, she could bring him their concerns. One family for whom Tissonne nannied thought that vaccines had harmed their daughter's health and tried introducing bone broth to her diet. Bone broth fad is by far the most retarded of all time, William texted Tissonne. For some stupid, demented reason, people believe it does something for their body, like the druids did when they were sacrificing humans and making soup out of them in the dark ages of Satanism. Thank you for confirming my gut feeling, she wrote back. Tissonne continued pursuing work with William, and she tried to broker a medical medium consultation for Timothy Schmidt, the longtime bassist for the Eagles, whose wife she had met through a raw food friend. Some William associates thought of Tissonne as too wide-eyed, according to one, but her responsibilities afforded her an air of uncommon proximity. "There's very few that I trust in life," William texted her, "and you're the most." When William and Schutzman moved in April 2017, they gave Tissonne a job preparing the house for their arrival. Despite her excitement, Tissonne kept the gig quiet as best she could, telling her brother and parents not to let anyone else know. "This is super-duper private, and so it's really important you don't share this with anyone," Schutzman texted her. The month prior, in March 2017, Tissonne had texted Schutzman with a health development. "I'm assuming this isn't anything to be worried about and prob just detox-related," she wrote. "I noticed a pretty large lump in my left breast today," Schutzman responded. "Breast lumps can be lymph or node-related if you're detoxing, during your cycle, or under the weather, but you should always have it looked at by your physician. Thermography scans are okay to get, too, if needed. You can give it a week or two and see if it decreases in size or swelling, too," Schutzman added. "Yes, feels like detox. I will do that and observe it over next week or two," Tissonne replied. "I've done thermography in past, so I'm familiar with that, so I'll just keep an eye on it." A thermography scan is a painless test that measures skin temperature and doesn't require radiation. The FDA and American Cancer Society have published warnings about using one as a diagnostic tool for breast cancer. A few days later, Tissonne followed up with Schutzman. A New Jersey-based woman named Munitza Ahmed has established herself as a leading voice in the medical medium community. She describes herself as the first practitioner in the world to be endorsed by William. Tissonne had sought her input, And Achmet told her that she thought it was an Epstein-Barr virus activity, packing in toxins into the cyst. "I did the best I could to keep up with the text Steph sent, and while I cared for her and always wanted to support her as a friend," Achmet says, "I would at times feel very overwhelmed by the sheer volume of text and the large variety of topics she asked me about." Achmet also says that she told Tisone to see a doctor to address her lump, but that she understood her to have EBV from mono as a kid. "Updating you on Munitza's opinion about my breast lump," Tisone texted Schutzman, telling her she'd been advised to up her intake of shaga mushroom tea and that Achmet was sending breast health massage oil from the beauty brand Living Libations. Achmet offered Tisone a 10% discount on the $30 product. Schutzman didn't text back about Achmet's assessment, but about 2 weeks later, she told Tisone, "I wanted to give you a heads up that Aunt and I won't be able to answer any health-related questions for the next month or so. All our energy will need to be on this move." While Tisone was readying the house, she told a friend in a voice message, "Anthony told me that my body is transforming since I've been here, like my health and everything has gotten a lot better." When the couple got there in April, Tisone spent time with them before heading back to Pennsylvania. Members of William's inner circle at the time understood his attention as a commodity, and Tisone's messages have a deferential tone. While Schutzman and Williams worked closely together, in August, Tisone conveyed her awareness of a lump in her breast directly to William. "I have a quite large lump in my left breast since March. Feels like I need to tell you," she wrote, adding, "No worries if you can't respond to this." William's brushes with fame were becoming more common. He described Mark Burnett, the producer of Survivor and The Apprentice, as one of his good friends to one early client, and told her that he only texted her, Moore, and other celebrities. In October 2017, along with Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson, he appeared in Heal, a documentary about mind-body medicine directed by Kelly Noonan, who is married to private equity billionaire Alec Gores. The following year, the couple and Town and Country editor-in-chief Stellaine Vallandes co-hosted a book party in Los Angeles for the actor Roma Downey, who is married to Burnett. A guest recalls William sticking close by Sylvester Stallone's side as the night wore on. The testimonials on William's site snowballed to include Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Diane von Furstenberg, Naomi Campbell, Alexis Bledel, James Vanderbeek, Calvin Harris, Rashida Jones, Kelly Rutherford, Lisa Rinna, Carla Gugino, Pharrell Williams, Hilary Swank, and Adam Sandler. His cosigns could range from spirited, Swank's and Sandler's representatives vouch for theirs, to something more like a framed headshot at the dry cleaners, Vanderbeek's rep says he wrote his 8 years ago, to aspirational. William listed Sophia Bush in the acknowledgments of four of his books. A rep says the actor was never a client, but they once met when she accompanied a friend to the friend's consultation. Next photo, to the end. Tisone's doctor was forthright about how much time she had left. She responded by asking if someone could contact William to check. William soon hit the peak of his own celebrity. "So your name came up from my cousin sending me screenshots of your Instagram and then other people just sending me your name," Kim Kardashian told him on the 2019 episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. He proceeded to tell the reality star that copper in her liver was causing outbreaks of her chronic psoriasis. Stephen Novella, a neurologist and the founding editor of the site Science-Based Medicine, sees William as part of a lineage of health-oriented operators, including Casey and Franz Mesmer, the late 18th century physician who practiced hypnotism and befriended Mozart and Marie Antoinette. This article will be continued in the next installment. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selection by Mark Hoffman.